From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Andy Richards.
And I'm Bill Messmer.
And welcome to Defrag Tools, the show that takes you inside Microsoft and inside Windows. Welcome back, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill's from the debugging team, previously here for DX Command and the whole debugger object model. Tell us why you're here today.
So we're going to talk a little bit about the WinDBG preview that you saw in the last two episodes. Yeah. And in more particularly around the notion of the scripting environment and how we've changed the scripting environment from what it was in WinDBG. Yeah. It's quite a bit improved from that experience.
Yeah, so for what, 15 years now, we've had this very textural, screen scrapey, terrible experiment in command methodology.
Yes.
Bang Analyze, classic example of a corporate in this space. And then you've turned it into an object model, so now it's much richer,
yes.
Easier to share data. Obvious things like, you know, I can now look at a piece of data and make a table easily.
Right, and you can do queries and all sorts of other stuff against it, yes.
So what's the experience like? What's the way you approach it in WinDBG Next?
Okay, so let me go through one particular little example here. And just for your viewers, if you're not familiar with DX, NatViz, and JavaScript, we did a series that was episode 138 and 39 on the object model, and I think 169 and 170 on JavaScript. And that's kind of deep dives on those particular technologies, so I'm gonna talk more again about the scripting experience in the new debugger.
Yeah.
So what I've got here on my screen, I've brought up a dump file that's just kind of a test that we use. It's got a bunch of data structures that have just a bunch of random things in them that we run tests against.
Cool goo.
Yep, so I'm going to bring up one of these, as you see in the watch window. And this is kind of similar to what Tim and Nick and Andy were showing you before, right? I get this nice experience in the watch window. And again, this is just a bunch of values here. So what I'm going to show now, right, we've got this script window, and I'm going to create a NatViz. And I've got this nice, again, docking experience. I can put my windows around where I want them.
Yep.
So what I want to do here is I'm going to, again, just a very basic NatViz. And I'm just going to go and say, OK, this type down here is called expression tester. Right, put in expand.
So expand is like the plus symbol, plus minus symbol thing?
Expand is like the NatViz notion of I want a bunch of items underneath this. Right, and so I can say item name is foo, and it's m value plus 2. Right, and now the moment I go up here and I click execute on this, you'll notice what just happened down here in the watch window, right? This NatViz that changes the object model of the debugger, right? I created this visualizer and I instantly got it. Mm-hmm. And one of the nice things about this as opposed to WinDBG is I can get this rapid experience where I go back and forth and iterate on my script. So I can just go up to the ribbon up here and I can say, get rid of that, right? Put it back, get rid of that. And so I can get this nice experience that's very, very iterative.
Yeah.
So I want to show one other thing here, right? One of the benefits that you get out of this. So suppose I'm editing, I've got my NatViz loaded down here, I'm editing, and I go back and I say, you know, value plus 3, and I hit execute. You'll notice if you're changing values, just like if a value changed when you step in the debugger, I can see that highlighted in the watch window. So it makes it very nice.
So what scope are you limited to with this expression? So like M value is
expression
with the thing. What happens if you put a global there? Will it trip up?
You can put a global that is within the scope of the module that type is talking about.
Okay.
But mostly it's the expectation for most NatViz is that it's
local context.
You're looking at the local context of this type.
Yeah.
So one of the other things I want to show is just quickly around error flow in this and how you get that. And it's much better, again, it's much more rapid of an iterative process here. So I'm just going to say item slash item. That's not legal NatViz.
Yep.
Right? And I'm going to hit...
Great XML, bad NatViz.
Yep. I'm going to hit execute here, and you'll notice I get this indication that errors were there. This line is highlighted, and if I hover over it, I can see failed to read node, well-formness. Oh, whoops. That wasn't the one I expected,
well,
but it's still an error. Right, so I can go back and execute. I still have errors here, unexpected empty item. Right, I can go back and put something in there. Still a problem here, item must have name attribute. Right, so I can just go through this in this very rapid fashion.
And now, why don't you put the foo twice? Would that be an error? Have you made two foos?
It would be an error, yes, and I don't honestly know where that's going to... I won't go through that one because I don't know where that's going to show off the top of my head.
There'd be dragons
here. So here, right, we've gone into a successful script and I see it.
Yeah.
And there's another kind of error I want to go through. And again, this applies to whether you're doing NatVis or JavaScript. If I've got some... I'm going to do something silly here, like I'm just going to dereference null pointer.
Yep.
And I go and I hit this. You'll notice I see down in the watch window, I get this red box and this error, unable to read memory at address zero. Mm-hmm. Right? So I can go back and, there's some error in whatever's fetching bar, right? I can go back and and do this. One of the other things that I want to show around this, a couple, you've got kind of IntelliSense here, right? Mm-hmm. So I can see item, and it's based on what it sees in this XML. It doesn't yet fully know the schema of NatVis for IntelliSense.
Also, it's learning from the previous.
It's what VS Code would do when you have an XML file that it does not necessarily have the schema for referenced.
So it wouldn't be a bad thing to open up one that's quite well formed, add the new things, and then throw away a template, for example.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yep. So let me show you one other thing about this. So if I go through and I have this script and I go, let me save this somewhere. I'll just call this test NatVis. And I save it. When I go and I make changes here, and I hit save again, you'll notice I just hit Control S, mm-hmm. and I'm updating. So whenever you save one of these scripts, whatever the changes that the current script made to the object model,
it's backed by the file.
Right. So you save it, it saves, and then it immediately takes effect on the object model.
Yeah.
Now, NatVis is kind of nice, but really what I want to talk about is the experience that we have with JavaScript.
Yep.
So that's improved a whole lot even over what we have in NatVis here.
So what's the main driving force between the two approaches? We would use NatVis for simple expression, simple watch window.
NatVis' primary purpose is around the visualization of types. So if I've got a type that a particular type that I want to reformat, I want to show the contents of a vector, I want to reformat this expression tester, NatVis is a great way to take a mapping from one C++ expression to another set of C++ expressions.
So they say that the data type was inherently decimal rather than hexadecimal, right? Or with the way it wants to just draw itself. You know, it wants to do 1, 2, 3 rather than 1, B, 8.
Yes.
Is that something that you could do in NatVis? Is that the way
you
do it?
Yes, you absolutely can. You can put on any of the expressions, you can put format specifiers that Visual Studio supports, most of them anyway.
Yeah.
Like you can put comma D if you want it in decimal, or comma X if you want it in hexadecimal.
Yeah, so maybe a good example might be you have a D word floating around, which actually is an H result, which you really want to kind of see it more as hex.
Yep. Yeah. All right, so I've undone the script. Let me exit here. And I'm going to go, right now, we've got a button up here that'll automatically load. When you click it, it'll load the JavaScript extension.
Yep.
And let me go and say I'm going to open up a new script, extension script. Right? And again, I don't like where it put that. I'm just going to move it over here. So one of the first things you'll notice is there's this link here. And when I click it, this is in all the templates when you open up JavaScript. I go to the MSDN documentation.
Yep.
Right? So I get this. If I don't know how to write a JavaScript script, we've got a great deal of documentation on MSDN about this.
Nice.
You can just click the link in your template and go and read up on how you do particular things. So let me just get rid of the comments here. Now I'm going to show kind of at first the same kind of thing that we did before. If you looked at any of the other JavaScript examples, I create an ES6 class. I'm going to have a property accessor that'll return this.mValue+2, right? Very similar to what we did in NatVis. Now, one of the nice things about JavaScript is that the IntelliSense experience that we get is actually much more reflective, right? We actually get not only what VS Code understands here, but we have definitions for what many of the things in the host object are, as well as a number of things that are in the data model itself. Mm-hmm. So if you've looked at a previous JavaScript extension, right, there's this initialize script method, and it returns an array that tells you how to modify the object model. And so I'm going to associate this. I'm going to say new host dot, and I don't remember exactly what it is off the top of my head. I can scroll down. Something about, there's this type signature extension and type signature registration, right? So I just go through that, and I can see the signature of the method, right?
Yep.
It's, you know, a JavaScript or prototype, which will become the canonical data model for this native type as indicated by the type signature. The formatting needs a little bit of work, but... So I'm going to associate my extension with the thing called expression tester, and I get that full. It knows what parameter I'm talking about. It gives me the help for it.
Yep.
and then we'll execute this JavaScript script, right? So again, right, I get that same nice view,
yep.
right, and I can go up and I can modify things as well.
So it said for this this object
for this type called expression tester,
run this class called right, my extension.
My extension and any properties that are on my extension will now become the visualizer for that type. Right, mm-hmm. it takes over. When you do a type signature registration, it takes over what the visualization of that type is.
Yep. So if you have a class called foo, you'll probably make a class called my foo visualizer
sure.
or something.
Yep.
And kind of build up your library of these helpers.
Yes.
Yep.
So we get a similar experience with errors, right? I can say, I'm gonna do something silly here, var x equals undefined, var y equals x dot z, mm-hmm. and I hit execute, right? I get inline in the script, right? I get the same thing I did before.
Yep.
We get a little bit better of an experience if you have, for instance, an error in runtime, right? Evaluation of, say, a property. I'll just add one bar here, and I'll do the same thing. X is undefined, y is x.z, return y. And I hit execute up here, and the script ran, mm-hmm. right? Everything in the global code, the global scope, executed, this function executed and did the registration, and you'll see down here we get that error. And I can see in this, right, it's at untitled 1, line 9, column 9, and I can go right back up to my source and see what particular line of code caused this failure to evaluate this property.
So let's say that X was a little bit more real. Let's say it was like a class that has classes derived from it, and Z is only in a derived class and not in the base class. Is it going to bridge that gap between polymorphic, not polymorphic,
so
and that type of thing?
By default, if you take a native object and you marshal it into JavaScript, by default, it will end up being the static type. We don't automatically switch it to the dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
You can explicitly, I believe the property is called runtime typed object. So if you say x.runtime typed object, it will do that analysis mm-hmm. and figure out what the actual runtime type is.
Gotcha.
And so you can access derived fields off that.
Quite an advanced thing, obviously, but you know.
Yep.
This is what debugging is about, is these weird situations, right?
Right. And I can do other things here, like just as an example of this, I can say, let's say I'm gonna put this on something like the debugger's notion of a module, mm-hmm. right, that comes out of the data model. I can go here and I can say, we're gonna call this end address, right? It's got base address and size. I'm just gonna add end address to modules. Let me get rid of my typo. And I'm going to return this.baseAddress.add, this.size. I use the .add to keep this 64-bit
mm-hmm.
because JavaScript numerics, if it actually goes to a JavaScript numeric, they only have, they're double. They only have 53 bits of ordinal precision, which is a risk for a 64-bit pointer.
Yes.
And so instead now I can go down here and say named model parent and same class, but I'm gonna put this on the notion of debugger.models.module. And I hit execute over here, right? This goes back. And now let me do just a quick model query on cur process.modules. Let me dock that over here so we have a big space to look at this. And I'll switch this to the grid view that Nick showed. I'll add that column in. Right, so now I've got, right, base address, size, and end address. Mm. And you'll see this updates, just like before, this updates completely automatically as I go back and forth.
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so let's go over to something else for one second. I've got another debugger instance up here, whoops. And this one, I wanna show you a couple new things that we've done in JavaScript. These don't necessarily specific to WinDBG preview, but they help you in that iterative process.
Yeah.
Right, so there's two of these that I want to show. One of these is, so I've got a data structure here. I've used this as a sample app in a number of talks. It has a dictionary that it's added a bunch of words to, and that dictionary is a try, right? So it's got a root node and every child, right? There's one letter, right? And each of those has a set of children, which is the next letters and some path from that root down through the tree to a node that's marked is a word.
So each parent can have 26 children.
Yes. Yep.
plus weird characters.
Right. So I can, we've shown this with NatViz before, and I can walk this and I can look at all these things and what their characters are. But I wrote a little debugger extension. Let me open this. So there we go. And again, I'll redock my window. And so this is a little bit more advanced, right? There's a, I don't know, 60, 70 lines of code here. I guess almost 100.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I want to show about this is we've added this new concept called the function alias. So one of the pieces of feedback that we heard from a number of people is, it's great. We've got these functions. How do we call them? We've got this really long script contents dot or scripts dot name dot contents dot function mm-hmm. that they have to type in. They'd love to have the simplicity of a bang command.
Yep.
Right? And so we added this thing called a function alias. And you give it a function, you give it a name, and now you can run over here, show, and I'll get tab completion on this, just like I would, right? Bang syntax, yet I'm getting syntactic tab completion, and I'm going to pass that dictionary. And it runs this. Now, this is not necessarily the best way to have written this. This just spits out like a classic bang extension.
Yep.
It could have returned an object model, and then you'd get all the hyperlinks and everything through that. This is just an example. And so I can see all these words in here, right? And I've got this through this bang extension syntax.
Mm-hmm.
One of the other things, and what makes this experience, again, very powerful, when I was developing this script, right, you never get something right the first time.
No, of course not.
Right? Like, ran into all sorts of little problems, and I'm like, well, how do I actually find this problem, right?
Yeah.
And we used to have, back when we introduced this, you basically have debug log, right? You've got printf style debugging. Well, we've introduced a script debugger now for JavaScript in the debugger.
Cool.
Now,
so you're debugging the debugger in the debugger?
Kind of, yes.
debugging with a debugger in the debugger.
Yes. You've got a script debugger inside the debugger. Now, this isn't yet integrated in the UI. It will be at some point in the future. So you have to do this from console. But let me go up here and just make some silly little mistake, right, in this guy here. So
I can is null pointer rather than not an is null pointer. Get rid of the bang on the front.
Well, that's not going to do. Yeah. I want an error, so I'm just going to. I have a typo. I want an error, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So I have a typo in this.
Rather than logic, yeah.
Right. And now let me save this out. Oop. I don't know why that had that problem. And it's executed. And now if I show try dictionary, right? Oh, first native child pointer X is not defined. Now I do get right the script line and everything else. But pretend this is something that like I don't completely understand why this just happened, right? So again, you have to do this from console. It's not integrated in the UI yet. So what I can do is I can load this script. Oops, script load. And now I've got back to show try, but it's loaded from the console,
mm-hmm.
right? And now I can say script debug try display 2.js. And now we're inside this script debugger, right? So when you're in this context, nothing else in the debugger is going to work. Like it's all going to be frozen effectively, right? You're in the context of a script debugger.
You're debugging debugger.
Yes. So I can do here a bunch of things, and this has commands that are very similar to what WinDBG has by itself.
Yep.
So I can look at, what are the event filters that I can look at? And oh, I want to break SXE, again, a very similar command to WinDBG, right? I can break on first chance exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll get out of the debugger, and we'll run this again. And you can immediately see, right, I hit a script break. There's a first chance exception. Right, first child pointer X is not defined.
Yep.
Right, location, line 50, column, and I can see what the line of code is, where this happened. Now, maybe, for instance, I don't understand how we got into this state. Right, I can look at the call stack, right, and I can see, again, the position, line, and column. I can see the full JavaScript call stack as I go through. And I can even do things like, well, maybe I want to stop on this display try node function, right? So I'm going to, we're broken at line 82.5. I'll just look at my source for a minute. That's here. This function starts at line 63. So I'm going to set a breakpoint on line 63 of the script. and I'm going to just let it run. So I'm going to go back and say, I'm going to do that again.
Right.
Now I'm at that breakpoint, right? I'm at this point in my code, and I can start stepping like I would do in the debugger, right? Step over, step over. I can look at local variables. I can do expression evaluation, right?
Yeah.
I do all sorts of things that you can do in a JavaScript debugger. And I can continue through this and, right, well, for var child of node.children, I want to step into that. Where did we go? We're now at line 47 in the script, right? And I can get this experience where, you know, now I'm at the children attribute, right? And I can step through this and I can see where and why my script has this bug in it, right? And then just go fix it and go back to the UI context.
Yeah, it's very cool.
Right, fix my bug over here
do that. It's the traditional debugging experience. Yeah, step by step, watching it as it goes through.
Yep.
That's very cool.
So.
Awesome. Well, that's I think it's quite a large amount of progress in the debugger. A lot of power, a lot of ease of use as well.
Yes.
The more we get into the object model and this easier scripting and the collective data set, I think the easier it's going to be for everybody. And I know we're investing in getting the data in there and investing in getting the data out. So it's great to see. Well, thank you for that.
Thank you. Good for to see you again. Me on.
As always, put your questions and comments below in the show notes. And we will see you next week on DFrag Tools.
Thanks, everyone.